Hi, I'm Doug Lyons from Oceanic Capital Management. Welcome to another episode of Ask the Expert. Today we're going to discuss divorcing during the COVID pandemic, what you need to know. We're lucky enough to have Matt Abatamarco, an attorney who specializes in New Jersey family law, to help answer some key questions about getting divorced during this pandemic. Hey, Matt, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
Might as well get right into it. I've worked with clients that are getting divorced, and they often have a lot of questions around this whole pandemic we're in. And we might as well just jump right into some of the questions that they commonly have. The number one question I always get is, you know, what are the different ways I can get divorced? And in this pandemic, which is the best one right now?
So many clients that are coming in are looking for an efficient way to divorce, and they're being told that the court system is backlogged and there's a little opportunity to move their divorce forward through the court system. And there is some truth to that. The court system is not the best option right now for many people. Unfortunately, it's the only option if two people cannot get along and figure out their differences. The court system has thousands of cases that come in the family part. So it's hard for judges when they're physically open to handle the volume of cases that come in. Now with this pandemic added on top of it, the courts are working through remote calendaring, and it's becoming very complicated to have trials. They're battling through it, but the waiting time to have your matter heard is significant. Therefore, I think more people are choosing mediation and collaborative divorce, where they control the process, they control the timeline. And through Zoom conferencing, people are able to join a conference with a mediator, with their attorneys. And in the collaborative model, they join with their financial advisor or mental health expert, and they will work through each and every aspect of the divorce in an efficient time frame without waiting to be heard by the court system. So it saves them a tremendous amount of money, a significant amount of time, and it works on a schedule that works for a couple rather than what works for the court system. And I think people also like the privacy and the convenience of working through the divorce process in a mediation, in a Zoom conference. They can sit in their homes and be comfortable, not worry about how their testimony is going to be heard by a judge, and have a basic conversation about what's important to them, focus on their interests, and develop a solution that makes sense for them, for their children, and for their family long term.
So mediation and collaboration are out of court. You're not in front of a judge, which is always a good thing. But can you describe, you know, really the real difference between mediation and collaboration?
Sure. So mediation, you'll typically have one mediator that will work between both parties. Rather than being plaintiff and defendant, in the mediation process, you're looked at more like mom and dad or husband and wife. And rather than positionally bargaining in the court process and mediation, you have one individual that works between both sides and tries to develop a deal that makes sense. You can have an attorney in mediation, and that attorney can guide you either during the mediation or afterwards. The mediator will help put together the general outline of an agreement and share that with both sides. And if everyone agrees, they'll sign that agreement, bring it to the courthouse, and get divorced. Collaborative law, which was brought to New Jersey in 2005, is it's a process whereby you bring in other professionals, not just a single mediator, to help manage the divorce process. A financial neutral can be brought in, or a mental health professional. And the real benefit of collaborative divorce is that it's more comprehensive. So rather than just having a single mediator work with both parties, you would have a financial professional that could help figure out creative solutions for maybe tax or how to divide the assets in a way that's beneficial to both parties, how to plan for college, how to plan for retirement. These things don't typically happen in a mediation. While there's discussions about those things, usually the mediator that's hired has one specialty. In collaborative divorce, you would have a financial professional that is their specialty, and they can work through those aspects. And there's also a mental health professional. one of the biggest impediments to success in a divorce is the emotional feelings that each person brings into the divorce process. When you have a mental health professional sitting at the table or sitting in a Zoom conference in recent times, those mental health professionals can help clients deal with how the children are feeling, how each party might be feeling, and rectifying some of the things that brought them to the divorce table. It's an invaluable aspect of collaborative divorce. When you have a financial and mental health professional sitting with a couple, you can resolve the conflicts and the things that are impediments to success. So while the cost might be a little bit greater in a collaborative process, the comprehensive solutions that are developed are well worth the money spent, in my opinion.
So it really depends on each client's, each couple's situation, and what process would be best for them.
Absolutely. You know, there's not one process that fits all. Every couple that walks in and every case is unique. And the needs of each family should be managed in a way that makes sense for them, not just on what their finances are, but also what their needs are. Some couples walk in with 90% of their case already resolved, and they might fit perfectly into a mediation process. Another couple might need significant help planning for college, and they might need a financial professional sitting next to them and figuring out a creative way to do that. Every client, every couple that comes in, there's not a process that you would say everyone should fit into. But I will tell you that 99% of cases that get started in the state of New Jersey settle outside of a court system. So why most people don't start with collaborative law or mediation, I do not know, because ultimately that's where they're going to end up anyway.
Right.
So if you're going to engage in diplomacy, it doesn't make sense to start with firing guns.
Right.
So yeah, it makes sense that most people end up in mediation either at the beginning or at the end anyway. Why not just start there? And, you know, the other thing too, Doug, is that the court system sends everyone to mediation. So if you file a complaint for divorce, they will send you to mediation to resolve custody and parenting time. And then they will send you to economic mediation to resolve the financial aspects of your case. So if you're going to be there anyway, why not start there?
So how are you, I heard you mention a couple times Zoom, in this pandemic, how are you overcoming the typical in-person mediation and or collaborative meeting?
Yeah, when the pandemic first started, all professionals, I think, were panicked about how are we going to survive this. I remember sitting down with the attorneys in my office and saying, grab all your files and bring them home with you. And my first few mediations were done over the phone. And there's something clumsy about doing it over the phone. But Zoom, being able to look people in the eyes and talk to them, really seems to work out well for the clients that are going through this and for the attorneys. The fantastic thing about the Zoom platform is that you can use a share screen function where you can actually type up the agreement and the couple can watch the agreement unfold before them. You know, when I was doing mediation in my office and running back and forth with a yellow pad, writing notes, all I was doing was talking about concepts, but the couple couldn't see the actual agreement unfolding. Now I can, in real time, show them the agreement as we're building it, and they're comfortable. They don't have to worry about travel time and expense associated with that. So for a lot of couples, I think this is a better platform than in-person mediation. And I never would have thought that this would be an option that would make sense for people. But now that I'm doing it more and more, I find that couples really enjoy, as much as anyone can enjoy, going through a process like this by doing it through Zoom, because, you know, I had a couple recently, they were sitting in at their kitchen table together and having a conference with me, talking through each and every topic. I think it's a lot more comfortable than sitting in a stiff attorney's office or some other corporate center trying to resolve your differences. So people are more relaxed. They don't have to worry about travel time. It's more efficient. And again, I think the share screen function of Zoom and watching your agreement unfold on the screen shows the progress you're making. There's so much value in that for people.
Yeah, that's great. And it also, you know, because you said you don't have to travel, scheduling meetings is a lot more convenient as well. So that's great.
Yeah, and that's true in collaborative divorce. You know, when collaborative, you have more professionals. So there's the financial neutral, there's the mental health, there's two attorneys and two clients. Getting seven people together sometimes can be challenging, but if all it is turning on a computer, it's a lot easier to get everyone in one location at the same time because they're in separate locations on a shared screen at the same time.
Right. Besides an attorney in this process, what other professionals can help in a divorce, whether it's, you know, the beginning part or during the divorce? What professionals do you think are important to bring into the process?
And in my opinion, I think in every divorce case, a couple should sit with a financial neutral or a financial planner as an individual client, because the decisions they're making are going to impact the rest of their lives. And if you're making a financial decision, whether it be dividing retirement accounts, figuring out your support structure, whether or not to keep your home, making that decision without the help of a financial professional is challenging. Lawyers are trained in the law. They do not know everything about different financial products, how they work, the tax implications. So I find it extremely helpful for clients and mediation couples to sit with financial professionals and develop their plan and make sure it makes sense. The other individual I think that's really helpful is a mortgage lender. A lot of times people will settle their case with one party keeping the home without going through the exercise of figuring out whether or not they qualify for a new mortgage. So agreements sometimes I see get drafted without that question being answered. Another example is life insurance. Divorce agreements typically require life insurance to secure child support or alimony. And if you have an older individual, they may not qualify for life insurance. So it makes sense to do those things on the front end and make sure that everyone qualifies for what they need so that they can develop a plan that's enforceable and that the agreement they make can hold long term rather than making an agreement and then having to redo it.
Yeah, that makes great sense.
You know, the other professional too, thinking about other professionals I've used recently, on the front end of divorce, going to a marriage counselor. A lot of times people come in and they're on the fence about whether or not they should get divorced. And I think you should always go through life without regret. And, you know, a lot of times people come into the divorce process with a lot of regret. And if you sit with a marriage counselor or a religious person that can potentially guide you, you can make sure you're making the right decision. So making that appointment, sitting with a marriage counselor, can be very helpful for some couples. And fortunately, I've had success with sending people to counselors and them resolving their differences such that they don't get divorced.
So that's not good news for you, but in the long run, that's great news for the couple. So
right. It's a terrible business model, but you know, I think most of us that are in the divorce business that are doing this, if we can save a couple, save a marriage, that's not such a bad thing.
No, that's great. Those parents with kids, when they're getting divorced, their number one concern is, you know, how is this going to impact the kids? So the parenting plan that's part of the divorce is really paramount. How is the coronavirus impacting the development of these parenting plans?
Well, that is the most difficult thing that's occurred, besides business interests getting hit very hard in the pandemic. I think that the most challenging part of the pandemic has been the parenting plans. It's been really challenging for couples dealing with COVID and who's tested, who's not tested, who potentially is around others that may be infected. it's caused a great deal of concern, especially with young children. There's a lot of parents that are concerned about exposure, and developing mm-hmm. parenting plans now is challenging because there typically is two parents that are staying home full time. But we know in the future, one or both parents are going to go back to work or back to their regular routines. So what we're trying to do is develop parenting plans that are durable, that can withstand the test of time. Because if you build a plan with that makes sense for virtual schooling or both parents at home, what happens next September or when the world economy reopens and everyone's back to work, that plan may no longer make sense. So we're typically building two plans, a plan for the current state of the economy, the current state of the world, and one for when life goes back to quote unquote normal.
Makes sense. Hopefully we get back to normal soon.
Yeah. That's what I think it, when this whole thing started, we thought it would be 2 weeks. Right. How foolish we all were then. Right.
Last question, and I also get this one a lot. My spouse wants to get divorced, but I don't. Or one of the spouses doesn't want to get divorced. You know, what can be done about that? How do you work through that?
Well, there's the hammer, which is file a complaint and serve your spouse, and that'll force them to get an attorney or do something. And that's one mechanism, and that's not usually the one I employ with individual clients. There's softer approaches to getting your spouse enrolled. One is discernment therapy, a process I was recently turned on to by some of the mental health professionals I work with. And discernment therapy is a six-week program or six-session program where the couple sits together and figures out whether or not the marriage can survive. The benefit in doing that is that the parent or the spouse that doesn't want the divorce may come to recognize that it's not salvageable. Sometimes sending the couple to a therapy session not related to discernment is helpful as well. Oftentimes in collaborative divorce, we will start with a divorce coach that can help the spouse that's resistant to understand that this is going to happen. In the state of New Jersey, you can't stop someone from getting a divorce, but the party that doesn't want to get divorced can certainly slow down the process. And all that does is just cause more resentment and cost more money for both individuals. So if you're going to go forward with a divorce, you want your spouse to understand it's happening. They may not like it, but the more that they come to accept it, the more efficient the process works. And it's better for kids if both parents are working in the same direction, because if two parents start fighting and one blames the other and God forbid says it in front of the children, you know, your mother or your father wants a divorce and they're causing all of this,
right,
can create deep wounds in children. So we try to avoid that and make sure that both parents have at least a script or a way that they're going to tell the children about it. And getting them both enrolled with the concept of, that the divorce is happening is really the first step in doing that.
Fantastic. Well, I hope our listeners found this discussion educational and informative. And I want to thank you, Matt, today for your participation.
Been my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Doug.
My pleasure. And if you'd like to reach out to Matt, his website at his firm is mammothlawfirm.com, all one word, mammothlawfirm.com. And we at Oceana Capital specialize in helping those with pre- and post-divorce financial planning, and our website is oceaniccap.com. We want to thank you for listening, and check back on our website for more informative blogs, videos, and podcasts. Please note that this presentation today does not represent an offer to buy or sell securities, and that Oceana Capital Management does not provide tax or legal advice. And today's guest is not representing legal advice on today's podcast. Thank you.